If a hospital would outsource their sterile processing department to a company, what kind of demands would they have towards that company? They would have full traceability. They want everything on time. They got service level agreements. They got everything. You do it because it costs money. And then you have your SPD in the basement. It's your own family doing that. And all the rules are gone.
In the midst of constant commotion in the healthcare industry, one unified voice rises above the rest. A beacon bent on banishing biofilm. They are sterile processing professionals who clean and sterilize their way to improved outcomes, and their patient safety victories often go unseen. This is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we give voice to that global force fighting dirty all around the world. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Rene Vies, product manager at Steelco Benelux BV. Rene has over 30 years involved in decontamination of medical devices. He is a member of the National Standardization Institute in the Netherlands NEN Sterilization Committee 301081. He's a former chairman of the National Sterilization Association in the Netherlands and a former board member of the National Sterilization Association in the Netherlands. So this is a very smart, bright guest, another one that we're bringing to the table, guys. And I know he's very active on LinkedIn. I think that's where you both have networked with him leading up into this interview. But he has a lot of important things to say.
Yes, and I am very excited about this one. I know that anytime Rene posts something on LinkedIn that comes across my feed, it is like, you know, a glaring sign that says, please pay attention to this, because his posts are just always very thought-provoking.
And because, guys, this podcast is a global podcast, and again, we said it last week, confronting global challenges with hopefully some global solutions, it's always a blast to have on folks. Not only is he an international guest, but he's a guy who has been around the globe in different CSSDs across the world, seeing these challenges and help develop very helpful perspective on how to answer them. So I'm excited to get him on the phone as well.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTracks adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Renee Vies, product manager at Steelco Benelux BV. Renee, I know a lot of people have seen you on the LinkedIn community, and I know that's how Mike and Hank and myself connected with you, but just wanted to give you a warm welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. It's a real privilege to be on air with you.
I think in the first segment, what we'd like to talk to you about is approaching CS or SPD from a business perspective versus treating it as a cost center. And I know you've had a number of posts on LinkedIn talking about that in recent weeks, and maybe set the table for us as we begin the discussion.
I've been working in CSSD for over 30 years now. I was a CSSD manager for 25 in Holland. One of the things that I noticed is that if you play a role in a hospital that is just a service center, then you're always at the end of the chain and you are not really leading. So if you approach your CSSD or SPD as a business unit that in the end will have revenues, and of course everything is about money in a hospital, then you might get a better position within the hospital organization.
Yeah, so Renee, some of the interest, obviously, in bringing you on the show is in the States, we're dealing with a number of problems that feel like, okay, they're just our problems. Maybe it's only our hospital or it's our organization that are asking questions or trying to overcome particular challenges. But NIC folks like you on LinkedIn asking the same questions, dealing with the same challenges of redirecting that perspective of a traditional cost center that at the only opportunity is to cut in order to increase the service or increase the quality perception to the hospital and the administrators. But what you're saying is that's not an American challenge. Probably not even a challenge just for the Netherlands. This is a global perception that needs to be changed to give us more freedom and more accountability throughout the chain to really make beneficial changes to the sterile processing culture and the department.
Yes, that's absolutely true. I had the privilege to travel around the world a lot and see sterilization departments from Australia to America and everything in between. And I can agree on that perception that the CSSD in every country is having the same issues. Of course, in specific countries, there is no education at all. And just like in the past, if you didn't do your job properly in the hospital, you would end up in the basement with the sterilization department. And that's our starting point everywhere on the world. But the issue is that you need to put yourself out there. And not only when there are problems, when a tray is late or there is a complaint about an instrument and you have to try to fix it, you have to be proactive and put yourself on the map of the hospital administration. And you do that. One of my posts was, do you have an annual report? Do you put your numbers out? And not only how many instruments did I process or how many trays, but also what did you save in costs or what did you earn in money?
Yeah, so Renee, my question then is, how do we get the tools that these sterile processing managers need to make those annual reports or business presentations actually powerful? Because many of them, like myself, are not coming from a business background where we've been trained or even had that responsibility before. Where do you see that falling on how these organizations are focusing on educating their CSSD leaders?
This, for me, comes back to where was our starting point? And our starting point was, even with me, also with me, I was a CSSD tech at some point. And then I moved up to be a team leader and then supervisor and then manager. And you just grew in your profession, but we did not grow in being a manager as such as hospital administration would like to have. And that is also our disadvantage. Our disadvantage is that we are real professionals and very skilled at what we do, But in hospital administration, you need also other skills. And those skills, we need to educate ourselves. Maybe we need to ask hospital administration to give us a course in real business administration. Because if you think about it, the value of instruments that go through the CSSD is probably average hospital $20 million, $35 million. We are managing that. The average value of the equipment we have installed, probably $1.5 million. So we are managing a lot of money, service contracts, outsourcing, repairs. So we are handling a lot of money. We need to be skilled in reporting, managing and reporting. Otherwise, they think down in the basement, you're only cleaning instruments.
Renee, it's amazing to listen to these, what you're saying, because it's like hearing our own thoughts on so many of these things. And I can't even count the number of times that I've said exactly what you just said, that most sterile processing managers distinguished themselves by first being technicians. But the skill set between being a technician and being a manager are two totally different things. But we just kind of say, okay, you've been a good technician, so here, go be a manager. And nobody's being given the tools that they need to be successful in that role. So that's amazing. I do have a question back to the view of a cost center, that if a manager is hearing this and they say, yes, I want to do exactly what you're talking about. I want to move from being viewed as just a cost center into being viewed as more of a, you know, a revenue generator. What are some of those sort of key numbers that they should be focusing on to report to their administration?
My personal view is that we need to report on, of course, how many cycles did we run, but also what did those cycles cost in consumption data. How many staff do we have, but how many instruments, not only trays, but instruments do we process? And instruments is linked to another post I saw online where somebody says only 20% of instruments on a tray is used. The rest we just reprocess every single time without being used. So if you link that to I'm doing 50,000 trays a year, at average 100 instruments per tray, blah, blah, that's 500,000 instruments, and I can cut that by 80%. That's the revenue, because in the end, I'm not saying you have to let go staff, but in the end, it's about efficiency. That's what the hospital wants. So they want to see how efficient your department is and what you can do to make it more efficient.
Renee, that's such a great point. I mean, we had a guest on not too long ago, Peter Nickel, who did his own study and found that he only used like 14% of the instruments in each tray, and really implored surgeons to look at how they could be more efficient and reduce the number of unused instruments that were being reprocessed every time that a tray was used in a case or surgery. And then I talked to another doctor, and that doctor said, hey, I have a little bit of a difficult time with that because there's so much variation from surgeon to surgeon, and I'm not really sure how you would pare that down. Do you have any advice or tools or strategies that some of our listeners can use to try to work with those surgeons and pare down the size of those instruments, trays, and do tray optimization?
It's hard because in my experience, indeed, Surgeon A will say, I need those specific 20, and the other one says, I need the other specific 20% of instruments. It is a complicated business. But in the end, if you look at the greater goal of where you're going, one of the things we are under pressure as a CSSD is that we are always pressed for time. They want that trace back within 3-4 hours, 1 hour, and all this takes time because we need to process all these unused instruments. So if you bring that back in your annual report, to go back to the annual report, and you say in your annual report, I can make my department more efficient by reducing instruments, and maybe if I have to replace my equipment, I can only buy 5 washer disinfectors instead of 7 because there is less to reprocess. That's all about efficiency. And then we're talking to hospital administration. Of course, if you talk to the surgeons, that's a different story. They want everything in the tray, and they probably want 20 trays in their operating theater instead of five because it makes them feel good. Of course, also, the scrub nurse wants that 20 trays because she doesn't want to be yelled at because the tray is not there. But in the end, it's all about logistics. We are a logistical department, and that logistical department depends on what comes in has to go out, and everybody wants to make it lean. And for that, you need numbers.
Pastor Renee, you stole my next question, which is so much of this proposal, which is great, is dependent upon knowing the numbers, which is dependent upon, I think, some type of technology assisting the CSSD departments to track the number of items that are going through their washers, the number of items that are being sterilized, the number of return trays that were sent to the OR but never even opened. What's the layout of the land in the CSSDs that you've been in for how many of them are still tracking all this manually, or has technology begun to provide that ability to capture the numbers in order to make these cases more easily?
That's about the geographic location. If you go to whatever, the Middle East, the Far East, there's no tracking and tracing, hardly. If you go to Northwestern Europe, everything is track and traced because we have the ability, and of course also the surgical procedures are planned through a planning system. And those planning systems ideally should be linked to the inventory of trays. So you cannot plan five identical procedures if you only have three trays. It stops. Now, what they do now is they plan five surgical procedures and just tell the people in the basement, hurry up because I need that. I need that tray for the third surgical procedure. And you're under pressure. So it has to do with money, of course, because these systems cost money. It has to do with education. And I also saw posts that people like to put color ribbons on instruments, makes it easy to complete the tray. They don't have to know the name of the instrument. They just put five blue one in and six red one, and that's a tray. If you go completely track and trace, of course everybody wants RFID, but not all the instruments are already do already have an RFID tag, but barcodes or numbers are there, or IR code, but that's all technical. If you can do things manually, of course, the automation and the computers help. But in the end, I would like to go a little different way. If you would outsource, if a hospital would outsource their sterile processing department to a company, what kind of demands would they have towards that company? They would have full traceability. They want everything on time. They got service level agreements. They got everything. And then you do it because it costs money. And then you have your SPD in the basement. It's your own family doing that. And then all the rules are gone. And it worked both ways. I sometimes can't get my head around that because I think reprocessing medical devices into sterile products is very important. I always make the comparison with the pharmacy department. Why are we so different from a pharmacy department in a hospital? Nobody questions a pharmacy department. Everybody questions the CSSD, SPD.
Yeah, absolutely. And Renee, I know that you've been vocal through social media specifically about how there's so many different standards based on where you live, and your perspective as somebody who's traveled all over the world is incredibly valuable. I wonder if you just talk briefly about what kind of danger it puts us all in when you get a different standard in the United States versus a different standard in, you know, Europe or Asia or anything like that.
You will always have different standards. I also have a particular personal opinion about that. I think the standards are there to protect the market and not there to protect the patient. It's about selling equipment. If I want to sell a piece of equipment to America, I have to have FDA approval. if you want to sell a piece of equipment into Europe, you have to have a CE mark. Does that say something about how good that machine is? How safe it is for the patient? No, it's about market protection. And I have a problem with that, because it cannot be that, for instance, a test device for a sterilizer can be sold in Europe and not in the United States, or vice versa, just because the standard is different, or that the body who is controlling everything is having a problem with it, because it might disrupt the market. My focus is on patient safety. I work for a company now, so I want to sell a machine. But the end goal of everything is patient safety.
Renee, that's so true, and it should always be the focus, and you've done a nice job, actually, of setting up our next segment. So we're going to take a quick break, but I think we want to get into thermometric validation with you and have that discussion as well. But I also appreciate you being really candid. That's a good question that everybody should be asking themselves. Are the standards there to protect the market, or are they to protect the patient? Because we're all here for the patient and to protect their safety. We're back with Renee Wies, product manager at Steelco Benelux BV. And Renee, we want to get into thermometric validation, but I think before we even do that, maybe you could describe exactly what that is. There's obviously some differences here in the U.S., and obviously our reach is global with the show as well, but I know that many people may not be entirely familiar with thermometric validation. So can you give us a quick background and intro to that testing?
Validation of processes is something we all have to do. So I'm talking about machines. We also have to validate, of course, our procedures. But this time I'm talking about machines. So your washer disinfector, your steam sterilizer, your low temperature sterilizer, and even your heat sealers. You are validating, you are checking if maybe IQ, OQ, PQ is more something people are familiar with, performance qualification. You can do that in different ways. I know in the US, chemical and biological indicators are used. That was also a post of mine, where in that way you check processes. In Northwestern Europe, people validate in a different way. The washers and sterilizers are validated by putting thermocouples inside the load on instruments and in instruments, and then measuring temperature and they're measuring pressure inside the chamber, and they are referencing that with the standards, and then they come up with data. So they're not putting any chemical or biological indicators inside that will help them evaluate the cycles. One of these things is a Bowie Dig Pack. That's also a chemical indicator in a specific format, and that's what they use. You can use a process jealous device, like a Helix device. You can use all kinds of devices. But thermometric validation is measuring the temperature on and in an instrument during a cycle. That can be a washer or that can be a sterilizer.
So, Renee, you mentioned in your answer IQ, OQ, and PQ, and I know you talked about the performance qualifications being one of those. Can you define the IQ and OQ for us as well, what those entail?
IQ is installation qualification. OQ is operational qualification. So that means if you put a new machine into a building, the machine is tested, of course, but in a factory. It comes in and then you do an IQ, that's installation qualification, where you check if all the connections to the machines work and if everything is connected in the right way, in the proper way. Then you do an operational qualification that's mostly done by the company, where they see when you connect all the data and the water and the steam and everything, if the machine is still running and within specification. And when that's done, you do a performance qualification, and that is the validation of the cycles. So the first two are about the machine, and the second is about the cycle and the products that are processed.
So at the department level then, how often are the CSSD users doing these performance qualifications checks, I guess. Is it on a weekly basis, on a daily basis?
No, the validation, so the performance qualification, many countries in Northwestern Europe, that's done once a year. I know in the UK, they do it four times a year, quarterly, but that's an exception. All the others do once a year. Then you got your daily and weekly tests. That is something else. That is your Bowie and Dick. That is your leak rate test. That can be helix tests, other tests you do while running the cycle. But mandatory is at least once a year a validation, thermometric validation, and on your machine and your cycles, every day a Bowie and Dick or a steam penetration test. That's what it is. And a leak rate test to test the machine itself, if you're talking about sterilizers.
And so are chemical indicators used then for the tray level testing of equipment there?
If you're sitting on a chair, I will tell you that nobody in Northwestern Europe uses these things.
Okay. That's you know, I'm sitting over here listening to this interview, and that's what I'm thinking is for many of us who, from the very first day we step into a sterile processing department in the States, that is critical. I mean, trays will not be used if it's opened, even if all the other data about the load in terms of the sterilizer passes, if there is not that strip of chemical indicator in the tray, our standards and understanding here in the States is ad item. I don't know if we would say that it is not sterile, but we would say that we cannot prove that it is sterile because that strip is not there. But you're telling us that it's a completely different perspective there, okay?
Yes, we do it in a different way. Of course, you're allowed by the standards, as well as in America, as in Europe, to use the indicators, biological or chemical. You can do that. You can even validate your sterilizer with it. But we chose another way. We chose the way of parametric release in the end and thermometric validation of these cycles. Where we can prove on an instrument level that the required temperatures and times are met. Personally, I think an indicator is an indicator. I also stated in one of my posts, also in the AMI standard, it says a negative indicator does not indicate that the products are sterile. It's in the standard, in a new standard. It was also in the old one. So then I posted, why would you even use it? If even a negative one will not tell you that it is sterile. Why don't you do something else? But this is how it is. I can't change it. We can only have a debate. And I like debates. I like to pick somebody's brain and just challenge them on all these facts. And they can make their own choice. And of course, if you live in a country with a specific legislation, you have to comply with that. But there are other ways. What if you find another way and you can save the multi-use of indicators? How much money would that save a year? I don't know. I think I've made a calculation once that if you do this full, as you in the States do, I think it's about €1,000 per sterilizer, probably, maybe more. How much money do you spend on indicators?
So, Renee, on just sort of a load-by-load basis, if I'm an SPD tech that's, you know, sitting there pulling them out, and my hospital does what you call parametric release, what does that actually mean for the technician? Like, what is their process?
No, it's done outside of their daily process. This is done on a different level. You can have a company do that, a validation company. They come in, they measure your processes, and that's it. You get a report, and with that report, you can prove that your process is fine, combined with the daily and weekly tests that you have to do. In countries like America, you have another problem. The OR wants to see those indicators, because otherwise they won't trust the tray to be safe. And actually, that is a little bit weird, because if they open a sterile pack that comes from somebody outside, there is no indicator inside. If you open a knee joint, a sterile knee joint, there is no indicator inside. They believe that the company who processed that knee joint did a good job, but they don't believe you. is a CSSD. So they want proof. They want four indicators on every corner of a tray. They want extra biologicals in orthopedics because they don't believe that you did a good job. Personally, I find that even offensive.
Renee, that is a fantastic point. And just getting back to what you were saying earlier about the cost savings, there's that respect factor. And I see that. You're right. They're opening up items from all number of manufacturers that they will never see their department. They will never, you know, hands-on get to see their processes. And yet they can come down to the CSSD and, you know, meet the people who are actually processing the trays, read the policies, inspect the equipment, and then they're still requiring to have that proof in the strip. But as a department leader, the provocative part of that quote is, we are spending a lot of money on a large number of tests to show things that what you're telling us today in other parts of the globe, you're not having to demonstrate in that same way. I think that's an insightful conversation.
Yeah, but it is something else. If you want to be able to do this, you have to apply parametric release. And parametric release is having a system in place where you check on a regular basis all the parameters. And that's your environment in which you work in. That is your education of the staff. But in this case, it's also about, are the machines doing what they should be doing? Is the steam of the right quality? Is the water of the right quality? You need to check that. And if all these checks are positive, we say the end product is good. You cannot check for sterility because then you have to open it, incubate it, and it's not sterile anymore. So what we do in this system is say, okay, I'm checking every individual parameter. And that can be a temperature in the washer, but it could also be the total function of the washer. If that is still intact, nothing changed, then the end product will be disinfected or sterile. So it is a different approach. From my perspective, sterilization with hospital-grade steam is not the best choice because it is not clean steam. The European standard says you have to use clean steam that is made out of RO or demineralized water with a certain percentage of non-condensable gases. The hospital-grade steam that is used in many countries over the world, if you open the door of the sterilizer, you will see a black sterilizer or a white one. It will be discolored. There are other things going on. It's not clean steam. If those things are not controlled, then maybe parametric release is a bit harder. And that is something that, yeah, I think we as a group of people, we need to make improvements and maybe... The new installations in the U.S., I saw they were probably a Steris one or a European brand, and they got clean steam generators. And that's the only way to go forward. And with validation, you need clean steam. You need optimal conditions. You need conditions that are always the same, reproducible environment. If you use ethylene oxide or you don't use ethylene oxide anymore, but... hydrogen peroxide, everybody wants to test the sterilization medium. But who tests the steam as a medium, as a sterilant? You need to control that. It's not a machine who is doing it. It is the actual presence of saturated steam.
Renee, it seems like a common theme that we keep coming back to is there are a lot of assumptions in our field that we assume that, you know, house steam is the same as critical steam, or we assume that the coldest spot in a sterilizer is always, you know, right above the drain. Could you talk just briefly about just kind of how pervasive the assumptions are and specific to this question?
If you look back, we all rely on something that is called the Bowie-Dick test. Yeah, we do that every day. Bowie-Dick test is either a textile pack or a single-use pack or anything else. But it's all a steam penetration test. But it's all based upon a chemical indicator and designed and developed in the 1960s by Mr. Bowie and Mr. Dick. And in those times, instruments were very simple. They were knives and forks. If you look at our instruments today on a CSSD, It's robotic instruments, it's instruments, it's laparoscopic instruments, it is very highly complex instruments, it's ophthalmology instruments. They're not knives and forks anymore. So how does that Bowie and Dick test that was designed in the 60s and is still basically the same, how can that represent all the instruments that we are introducing in our sterile processes? That's impossible. The basics are good. The fundamental things are good, but not the actual sterilization.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because we also had an interview with Paul Day Sternberg Stojakovic. But that was one of the things that he really highlighted in his interview, was that we have to look at new processes and ways, more specifically on his end with cleaning, and talked about the recirculation of contaminated water, such as in an ultrasonic, and how we can actually be cross-contaminating instruments as we're attempting to clean them. So I think that's really what you're getting at, is that instrumentation has become more complex, but our processes haven't necessarily advanced as much. And would you say that a lot of the advancements in these challenge devices, et cetera, are geared more towards decreasing the amount of time and increasing the quickness with which we gather the same data versus really challenging at a more difficult level?
I will give you an example. Are you familiar with the instrument that's called the Farco handpiece? It's a very simple instrument. It's only 15 centimeters long with a 1 lumen, and it doesn't look very complex. That instrument was tested during validation, and it failed. Everything else was fine. Only that specific instrument failed. And we use clean steam. Everything is fine as far as we know. That specific instrument has a very thick wall. And in that thick wall, there is a piezo element. And that was functioning as an insulation to the inner lumen. What happened is that you got so much condensate in that lumen that it blocked the steam penetration. And it didn't sterilize. We looked at the IFU. Everything was fine because the manufacturer didn't look at this specific aspect. And the solution was, instead of putting it horizontal in your tray, put it vertically. And then the instrument drains. And everything is fine. So you can put your chemical or biological indicator anywhere, but it will never mimic that specific Farco handpiece. Even with the perfect conditions, you can have fails. And if you want to have data, you need to measure things. And I'm pro data, and I'm not so pro color changing indicators or anything else. I want numbers. I don't want colors. Black to gray or white to black or whatever.
It's hard to do a study on colors. That's a very, very good point. It is impossible to look at tolerances if you're only looking at colors.
Yes, there is a study on that. Only a couple of percentage of people in the whole wide world can identify the exact color. We all have different perceptions. And even if I had a weekend of party on Monday, I will see the color differently than on a Wednesday. We were talking about Bowie and Dick, and maybe Bowie and Dick being obsolete because of the design and the fact that it uses an indicator, and a lot of tests are derived from a Bowie and Dick. In steam sterilization, also in the AMI standard, it states that you can only have 3.5% non-condensable gases in 100 milliliter condensate. I'm not sure how many times steam quality is tested in the US, but I think if that is the margin, you should test it. If you don't test it, you don't know. You could have a lot of non-condensable gases, and a non-condensable gas is like hot air sterilization. And we know that it is 2 hours for a 160 degree centigrade. So that is not effective. So what you should do is do something completely different, and I have a sensor in place that measures the density of the steam. There are also standards, also in the U.S., that say your saturation percentage of steam should be X percent, 98 or 92%. Who is measuring that? So there are things in the standards that we don't measure because we can't or because it's too complicated. And I think there are many, many aspects that we don't know. Not everything we know or that is in the standard is evidence-based, and I think that is very important. This is just something written down in the 60s, copied to 1965, and it ends up being copied in 2018, and nobody questions it. And we need to always ask ourselves, why are we doing this? I'm not a follower of the standards. I understand the standards and they need to be there. But I always want to ask myself, why? Why is it there and what is the benefit? And is there another way or a better way? And I think that is something that all the managers out there and the people listening should always ask themselves. Why is this procedure in place?
But it's such an easy answer. It's because it's the way we've always done it.
Yeah, and that's good. And then we go into a debate.
Right. Well, we need to continue that debate for sure and having you back on again sometime in 2018 for sure. And and again, Renee, great, really good insight, really great passion, and just want to thank you again for joining us.
It was my pleasure, and I'm looking forward to the next session.
That was Renee Vies, product manager at Steelco Benelux BV. Hank and Mike, I got to say, another good one, another international guest, the third we've had to date. I really love his concept of an annual report, and I know we mentioned the Peter Nichol interview when we were speaking with Renee, but I want to emphasize how much that data that we keep requesting, when presented properly and targeted around those types of initiatives, can at least shine a light on a challenge such as reprocessing so many instruments that go unused every day.
And the question goes back to a reoccurring theme that we've had on the show of how do you capture this data? Do these departments have the tools and the technology that they need to really start delving into the data points in order to make those type of annual reports actually mean anything? And then taking it one step further is, as a sterile processing manager, do these folks get the training and support that they need either from the hospital themselves or from these larger conference and certification organizations out there that are supporting leaders on the technical side of things, but oftentimes there's more that can be done, really holding them up under the business training and business acumen side of it as well. And I think that came out great in the interview.
Yeah, I really loved this whole interview, and I just want to emphasize how important it is to have somebody out there like Renee who's asking sort of those challenging questions that, you know, really get at a lot of assumptions that we have just spread throughout our industry, you know, starting with what does your CSSPD look like from a very simple business perspective all the way to, well, you know, what are the assumptions in our standards? This was a great interview, and I'm already looking forward to having him back again.
Yeah, he really gave us a lot to think about. I know he shocked us with the how do you measure a color. So that was really an excellent point to be made, and that's going to do it for this week's show. But as a reminder, you can support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. If you have any topics that you would like us to cover on a future episode, or if you would like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.